to the Steelers Battle Lake podcast. My name is James, joined once again by my co-host, Cody. Cody, how are you this fine Monday?
Monday? Yep, it's Monday. I'm as to be expected. I'll put it that way. I mean, I'm okay. I'm good. I'm me personally. If we're talking about Steelers stuff, it's a different, I mean, whatever.
I want to know about Cody the person. That's what I want.
Cody the person is happy he got done with work earlier today.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, it was, I mean, we both got out of there real early today. It was nice.
Yeah.
I mean, we're recording right now and it's not even 3 o'clock yet. Oh, I lied. It's 3:18. Whatever. It's, you know.
For us, it's early.
We're making up for last week and the podcast being out so late with the technical difficulty issues we were having and hoping that they don't happen again today.
But, yeah, sorry about that, folks.
Yeah.
We'll make it up to you.
We will. I don't know how, but we will. But yeah, super excited, super just ready for talk about Steelers football.
Yeah, man, I'm ready for the changes. Seems like some changes might be happening. I'm also ready to talk about some good Steelers by the Lake news. Got a podcast episode like by one of our followers there. That would be PBG26263EDGPP. Thank you.
Thank you.
Also, a new follow on Twitter by Jordan York Music says he is the twice in a row voted as Pittsburgh's top pop artist. So,
well, then, if you're listening,
I'm not real familiar with you, Jordan. I apologize for that, but I really appreciate the follow.
I'm about to familiarize myself with your music, with your tunes, and maybe, who knows, maybe we get a new intro.
Yeah, man. We might have to talk to Jordan.
I'm just
going to
put that out there for now.
Yeah.
I'm going to tweet it at him later.
You should tweet at him.
I'll tweet at him from both our Steelers by the Lake account and my personal.
Yeah, and then I'll retweet it.
Heck yeah, man. But maybe we'll be in contact. We'll find out for sure.
Yeah. So, yeah, we'll see.
Maybe that'll happen. But anyway, so that's the Steelers by the Lake news. Again, we appreciate all the new follows, all the new likes we get. Again, Facebook used to tell us every time we got a Facebook like, some kind of update happened to where we don't get the names anymore, or if we do, we don't know where to look.
You got to go looking for them. You got to dig to get it now.
I'm learning Facebook again, which I never stopped learning, but this side of it's just different. But anyways, Steelers news. Let's go to Steelers news before we get too lost on this freaking train that we're on.
One piece of really good news for Pittsburgh. We talked about this a few months ago as this is an ever-evolving process throughout. Hines Ward has been voted as a semi-finalist to the Hall of Fame. That means he is one of 25 semi-finalists. And I'm going to be honest with you, I looked at the list and it's nowhere near as intimidating as it is most years.
No.
Usually there's like 5 or 6 guys that you're like, yeah, probably all those guys are going.
Yeah, this is
it's not
his
like
year.
That this year.
This is his year.
Yeah. He's got a better chance, I think, than most years to get in. I think it's a little bit weaker of a class this year. I only saw like 1 or 2 guys that I would have thought would be guaranteed like first ballot guys.
Yeah.
And then a lot of questionable ones. So I think he's got a chance for once, and that has me optimistic because I really thought that he was just going to be a semifinalist for like the next 20 years and then never get in. Yeah.
Someone who's for sure getting in this year is Devin Hester. There's no way.
Yeah. That was the one that I looked at and I was like, yeah, he's got to go in. It's like the best return man punt and kick in NFL history. And it's not close.
And missed field goal even. let's be real. Everything for sure. So other news, Thursday, Minkah Fitzpatrick was activated off the COVID list. Which was very good news for us. That around the same time was when we were hearing good news on TJ Watt and Joe Hayden. Later found out Joe Hayden would not be playing in this game. But both Minkah Fitzpatrick and TJ Watt did make their reappearance in this game, which was very good for Pittsburgh.
Yeah, drastically needed. They need some good news. You had a bunch of people hitting the COVID list and the injury front all at the same time. Which really led to a bad result against both the Lions and the Chargers. So it was looking like a healthier unit going into this game, which you would have thought would have been good news. It would have helped maybe. I don't know. So some other news that happened before the game. Steelers placed both Eric Ebron and J.C. Hasenhauer on the injured reserve. Eric Ebron with a knee injury. No indication yet as to how severe it is. J.C. Hasenauer with a pectoral injury. Yep. Also no indication as to how severe it is. If Hasenauer requires surgery on that, that will be it. That'll be season ending for him. With Ebron, you never know. He could be it's possible just like a meniscus or a sprain. If that's the case, he could be ready to go again in 3-4 weeks. But if it's anything more severe than that, then you have already seen his last snaps as a Pittsburgh Steeler, which his very last one was a receiving touchdown against the Chargers. So at least that's a good way to go out for him.
Very right? good way to go out for him. In response to J.C. Hasenauer going on the IR, they did promote John LeGlue to the 53-man roster, which was good. And then you also saw the defensive lineman Daniel Archibong and wide receiver Anthony Miller both got elevated for the Bengals game. Obviously, Archibong had to do with, we talked about, or we didn't talk about, but one of the inactives for the game was Isaiah Buggs. And then you also had Anthony Miller because Ray Ray remained on the COVID list. So you had to get an extra receiver in there. And that also led to Anthony McFarland being the kick return guy, which...
Yeah, wasn't which is
horrible.
Neat.
Wasn't horrible.
No, I thought he looked kind of explosive and fun, honestly. So I was excited to see him out there.
Yeah.
The inactive list after Sam Sloman. Let me find this because I forgot to write it down.
That's okay. Sam Sloman, yes. Kicker Sam Sloman was re-signed, or I shouldn't say re-signed, signed to the practice squad. Sloman being the kicker we had in earlier this year when Chris Boswell went down with an injury. So that was a move that we did. I don't quite understand why we did that one, but whatever.
Yeah, that was real questionable to me too. I was wondering if maybe something happened. Boswell started getting the sniffles and they thought they were going to have to throw him on the COVID list or something.
Maybe. You know? Who knows?
You never know, but glad to see that Boswell was healthy enough to play. I appreciate you buying me time. I now have the inactive list. So Joe Hayden was unable to go. Dwayne Haskins also on the inactive list. Buddy Johnson, a healthy scratch, Kevin Rader, and then the big surprise of the day was defensive tackle Isaiah Buggs, who has been the starting nose tackle since week 3 when Tyson Alualu went down early in week 2's game. So he's been the starting nose tackle. There have not been good results with him as the starting nose tackle as far as stopping the run. Nope. He's not been a huge asset in that department. So they were looking to make some changes, which we saw very early in the game with the original starting defensive front being Cam Hayward at nose tackle, Chris Wormley on one defensive end side, and Henry Mondo starting on the other defensive end side. So not at all how you had pictured it at the beginning of the year, especially since a lot of people weren't even sure if Mondo was going to make the team.
Yeah.
So now he is a starting defensive lineman, which for some folks is exciting and for a lot of folks is very scary.
It's very exciting for James.
Very exciting. You know, I love to see the kid play. I love how athletic he is. But, you know, I did a little more research on him this last week because I was like, you know, it seems like he has a tough time disengaging sometimes. And I wonder what his measurables when he came out. He's only got 31 1/4 inch long arms. That's why, man.
That'll do it.
That's why he's struggling so much, and that's why he does better on the outside than he does on the inside, because he just gets swallowed up by those guys with the long arms. And outside, you can at least use your athleticism to get around guys. And
yeah.
Not so much on the inside.
No. So let's go ahead and talk about this Steelers game with as little as amount that I want to talk about it, but let's talk about it.
Yeah, so we always start off with the quarterback, and that's the appropriate place to start this week as well. Unfortunately, this was kind of opposite of the week previous, where Ben had one of his best games, if not his best game of the season against the Chargers. Probably one of his poorest, if not his worst games this week against the Bengals.
I think it's
two interceptions in the first half. The very first interception was ugly. It looked like he was thinking that Chase was going to stop and go for a back shoulder fade. Problem was Chase Claypool had his guy beat by 2 or 3 steps. So if he threw the ball out in front of him, might have been a touchdown. Instead, it's an interception.
Yep. Second awful interception start. Was at the end of the first half. And Ben got his arm bumped. Dan Moore did a horrible job blocking on the play. It was an out route to, I don't even remember who it was to. Oh, James Washington.
Yeah, and, Washington.
Picked
yeah.
off by Mike Hilton, the previous Pittsburgh Steeler, and returned for a touchdown.
Yeah. That one I don't really put on Ben just because he was unable to complete the throwing motion. He only got like three quarters of the way through, and then somebody interrupted his arm from continuing through the motion, which is why the pass was so ugly. And it kind of artificially inflates his interception numbers for the day, too, making it look a little worse than what it was. Regardless, it was not a fantastic game for Ben.
Well, it wasn't.
And just kind of a bad game for the offense.
Yeah. Yeah. Bad game for the offense. But even if you go back and look at the play, James Washington's not open on that play. Mike Hilton has him covered. It ran the route for him, basically, without being in front of him like we talked about with James Pierre and the game-winning interception against Denver Broncos where he cut the route. But Mike Hilton was not, I guarantee that pass wasn't completed even if Ben's arms wasn't hit.
Yeah.
So again, I think either way, I'm not saying it was Ben's fault for the interception, but I am saying either way that was Ben having a predetermined thought in his head and not actually going through his progression and finding an open receiver, which I hate.
And we know too, like, having been fans of the Steelers, having watched them so closely, having watched film, we're pretty good with knowing strengths and weaknesses of current Steelers players, and especially ones that have moved on to other teams, then when we're able to say, while they were with Pittsburgh, here's what they struggled with. This is two games that Pittsburgh played the Bengals, probably not going to get to play them a third time the way they're playing right now. Pittsburgh, not Cincinnati. Cincinnati will probably be in the playoffs the way they're playing right now. And what we know to be true is that Mike Hilton's greatest weakness is his long speed. If you send vertical routes against him, that's where you can beat him. If you make him run long distances with faster players, he struggles with that because he just doesn't have the speed to keep up. They didn't do it once in both games.
Nope. Why would they?
You deserve to lose when you do that.
And
when you know there's a clear weakness of a player that you know better than anybody and you don't exploit that weakness, you're asking to lose.
Yep, and this goes back to the issue that I've had all year of, and I think it's more apparent now than ever. We can't play call. I think Canada has proven that he cannot be an effective play caller, and I don't think that he will be as a Steelers offensive coordinator. Now, that's not saying I don't think he can improve. I just, if you've gone this long seeing how poorly the play calling is and haven't tried to divert anything, change anything, use a weakness that you already knew of, like nothing has changed in our play calling, I don't think it's going to start now unless Mike Tomlin says, look, fix it or you're out, which I don't think that's not Pittsburgh's, that's not their way, that's not what they do. So I don't think Matt Canada is going to be with Pittsburgh very long, at least as an offense coordinator, because he can't play call. And that's what you're supposed to do. And it's very unfortunate. It's very unfortunate.
Got to get creative, too. And you're not really seeing a ton of creativity in this game. I don't know that I saw one jet sweep the entire game.
You had the one play that I didn't like in the first quarter, in the first half, might have been the first quarter, where you had two running backs in, Anthony McFarlane was lined up in like a tight end position almost towards the end of the line, and you had Benny Snell in the backfield, and Anthony McFarlane went in motion past Ben, and then it was a handoff to Benny Snell. But I don't even think I don't even think that was ever going to be effective. You put in a guy in there that can't run block. I don't know. I didn't like the play call. You didn't even have your, like, if Najee's back there, maybe it's different. If Najee's involved in the play somehow, but you put Anthony McFarlane and Benny Snell in there and I don't like it. I just don't like that play call at all. And then they never went back to it again. They never showed that and ran something different out of it. It was almost like a here, look at this. And then I'm never going to do it again.
And you're effectively using Anthony McFarlane as a wide receiver, simulating the fake jet sweep at that point. But if he's never run the jet sweep, there's no one worried about it. So I feel like you almost have to run the jet sweep to McFarland first before the dive to the running back's going to work.
Correct.
So, I mean, this is something that we thought we were going to get to see a lot of at the beginning of the season with motion with Anthony McFarland and start using him out in space because of his quickness in one-on-one situations, ability to get some mismatches against linebackers that just aren't as quick as him. But if you're just going to hand a ball off to him and use him like a regular running back, then you're not playing to his strengths.
Nope.
So just frustrating. I feel like they need to start throwing some trick plays in there or something just to get something to catch people off guard. I mean, you do have a now number two tight end that played quarterback for most of his career as a football player. So maybe something with what appears to be a tight end screen and then a double pass where he bombs it to somebody. I mean, let's start getting creative with something here because the regular vanilla playbook is predictable and not working at the same time, which is unique.
I'm missing both Bruce Arians and Ken Whisenhunt more than I ever thought I would.
Yeah.
I'll put it that way. Those guys were creative, inventive. If something wasn't working in the middle of a game, they would change it. Because they're not insane, which is doing the same thing and expecting a different result when we've done that almost the entire year. But that's just where I'm at with it. And I didn't agree with half the play call. Anyways, we're getting too far off into this. But we're on to running backs now, kind of.
Yeah, let's go to running backs.
Najee Harris, I don't even know where to start.
He had nowhere to go, man. Let's be real with it. Like, and none of them had anywhere to go. The only guy that shows any good numbers is Kalen Ballage, and it's completely artificially inflated by a 13-yard run in the fourth quarter when they were in a prevent defense. So the offensive line did not create holes for the running backs. And then it's compounded by the fact that they got down by so much so early that they couldn't have a balanced attack later in the game. They had to go all pass, so now you can't really even use your running game any. Just a frustrating thing to watch as they continue to somehow struggle mightily running the football with a top running back, one of the top running backs in the league, and you still can't move the ball.
Yeah. Again, I said this last week. I think if Najee Harris is the running back for five or six other teams, he's leading the league in rushing by far. By far. He is way too talented, way too much of a heavy stick runner. He's going to run you over. He could even juke you out, spin you out, whatever he's to do. And he's a talent. And I saw him visibly get frustrated multiple times in the game. And I'm worried about his longevity with Pittsburgh because he's not enjoying himself or having fun playing football. And I'm not saying people only stay with teams when they have fun or this or that or whatever, but he knows his value. I don't think he's a jerk. I don't think he's a Le'Veon Bell where he'd sit out. But I can tell you right now, if they don't do something to help him or get him involved more and make him feel like a productive player, that he strives off feeling productive. I can just tell. The characteristics that he has as a person, as an individual, as a player, he thrives off of playing well. And I'm not to say that the other players don't, but Najee Harris literally, it fuels his fire when he gets a good run or gets a good hit or lays it. He doesn't have the opportunity to lay good hits on people. He literally gets the ball and is meeting people, not even in the hole, like they're halfway into the backfield. And he's got to try and make some room or do something, and it's just rough. It's very rough. I'm very upset for him in the fact that we can't run block. I don't know. I don't know how I feel about it. You want to talk about offensive line now? You want to talk about offensive line?
Let's get him out of the way. You know, Dan Moore had an awful game. I think Trey Turner was slightly behind him. For the most part, I didn't think Trey was awful, but there was one time where he allowed pressure right up the middle. A lot of defensive tackle to run right by him, and then he hit Ben and sacked him, of course, because that's what happens when you don't do a good job. And you just didn't get any push out of the line. Maybe I think Okorafor held up well on the pass blocking thing on the right side, but otherwise just missed assignments all game long. Really, the pressure wasn't as bad as I thought, but the complete inability to run block was just awful.
Yeah, wasn't good.
I did like the decision to start BJ Finney over, over Joe Haig. I did not want to see him at left guard after getting beaten back-to-back plays and costing us the game against the Chargers.
Yep.
So Finney, I think, held up better than what we saw Haig hold up on the interior, but he has played his entire career at guard in center, so that does make sense that he should play better there. But Yeah, not a great performance from anyone on the offensive line.
Nope.
I think Banner got in there for one play, and being a tackle eligible, he probably was the best on the offensive line the whole game.
Yep.
And it's just because he only played one play.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. I agree completely. Moving on to tight ends, obviously no Eric Ebron. Pat Freiermuth obviously had a touchdown on the game, the last one the Steelers saw that got them to
hell of a catch, man. And he took a nasty hit to the head and still hung on to it. He's actually in concussion protocol, so that'll be something to look for this week. If he's unable to come back from it, then we might see another elevation from Raider and possibly maybe even Jay Sternberger getting the call up too. You never know.
Ooh, who we've talked about recently, yep. And James is really excited for.
Really good receiving option for sure. I don't think he's going to give you much blocking, but neither did Eric Ebron. So
fair enough. Moving on to the defensive side of the ball, because I don't, unless you have more tight end stuff you want to talk about. Yeah.
Just one real quick. They did actually throw the ball to Gentry once.
Yep.
And he looked at it and saw a bunch of guys smaller than him and ran as fast as he could and hard and straight and broke some tackles and got 10 yards.
Yep.
So I do wish they would use that more often just because he is so big and strong. He will get you good yards if you can catch him and hit him. Just he's 6'8", 280 pounds.
He's big.
Throw the guy the ball.
He's big.
Yeah. He's a massive tight end, and he's going to be stronger than pretty much everyone that covers him. So if you give him the opportunity, he's going to get you some yards and probably catch more of them than will be incomplete. So I really hope they start utilizing him in addition to Pat Freiermuth. It's a good way to open up the field and get those linebackers to back off of the run a little bit.
Yeah. I'd love to see more plays with him and Freiermuth out there in a spread formation. I would love to see that because they both are dynamic threats in the passing game. And you put those two out there with three wide receivers or even two wide receivers and you motion out Anthony McFarland or Najee Harris and you create mismatch that way. And again, this is something we're not doing. It's basic football and we're not doing it. The basic of football is find a better matchup for your team that takes advantage of the person that is guarding a player on the defensive side of the ball. And we can't even scheme that right. And that's sad. It's very sad. That's what it is.
I agree with you.
Yeah, defensive side of the ball. Defensive line.
We didn't talk wide receivers yet.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
We got to give...
That shows what I felt about the wide receivers.
Got to give Deontay Johnson credit. I feel like he had himself a nice game again. Put up some good numbers. Again, we didn't see like the groundbreaking play of busting stuff off for a touchdown. But... he never gave up, and I'll give him credit for that because I've been critical of him when I feel like he did. So I have to give him credit. You know, when the game seemed like it was out of hand and Ben wasn't giving up, at least Deontay Johnson was also not giving up. We can say that definitively.
Yeah.
I thought it was probably the most up and down performance of Chase Claypool's season. With him dropping a very crucial pass on a third down, forcing a punt in a situation where he had all the room in the world to run. There's one guy he's got to beat, and it's a safety. Make a move or throw a stiff arm, and you're probably scoring a touchdown, and he bobbles it for about 10 yards, and then because of it,
gets leveled
he
by
takes
the
a hit, and then it's incomplete.
I do think Ben could have thrown that ball earlier, but that doesn't change the fact that Claypool has to make that catch.
Yeah, and the reason he didn't throw it earlier is because a linebacker jumped up in his window and was right there. So if he throws it earlier, he's either going to throw a pick or hit the guy in the chest. So that's why he didn't throw it earlier.
Yeah.
But yeah, I just felt like you had that, and then you had the long pass play to Chase Claypool. Nice job. And then you have Chase Claypool ripping a defender's helmet off and throwing it to the ground out of frustration. And then you have him winning a jump ball, the best jump ball I've seen him get all year. He's so up and down. If the dang guy could be consistent, he could be a top wide receiver in the league, but he is extremely inconsistent right now.
Yeah.
And it's frustrating because you see the talent. The talent is absolutely there, but he just is not consistent from play to play. And maybe it'll get there as he gets older and more mature. But
yeah,
right now it's just frustrating.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I do believe we're going to see. I think Claypool is too naturally gifted and talented to not see improvement in this area. The things he's dealing with, I look at it very similar to Chris Boswell's off year. And I, granted, I was hard on Chris Boswell. I was very hard. But I processed through it and realized my mistake there. And I think this is the same thing that's happening to Chase Claypool. I think Claypool is just having a mental battle of, you know, hey, I was the number two or three receiver. Now I'm the number one or two, depending on how you look at it. You know, yeah, he doesn't get the number of pass attempts or pass receptions as Deontay. But I think you could very easily say he's the number one receiver in this offense and Deontay's the slot or whatever else. I think it depends on how you look at it. But again, Chase Claypool's mentality is, you know, hey, pressure's on, and he's not handling it very well. And I think that will change over time. I think his maturing, I think his self-confidence, I think all these things will improve given the right time and the right atmosphere. So I don't know. I expect to see improvement from him even as soon as this year, maybe not in a week or two, but as soon as this year when he gets in a rhythm or gets some good plays going, I think we'll see improvement.
Well, one other noteworthy thing for me on one other guy, only one catch from him from Anthony Miller, but let's give the man credit. It was one hell of a one-handed catch.
Yes. Almost down to his shin, almost.
Yeah. Yeah. Really had no business catching it or staying on his feet afterwards. Did both. Thought it was quite impressive. And you have to wonder, can they find room for him on the roster? Do you make a move like, does Cody White get released and then try to sneak him back down to the practice squad? Because it seems like Anthony Miller probably is a more dynamic receiver.
Yeah.
Again, only one catch. But he didn't exactly get the ball thrown to him a lot of times either. So I think with what we saw on that, and then he fought. Boy, did he fight his butt off to try to get to that first down marker. And, you know, you just some guys have it. Some guys are there and they're wearing the helmet.
Yep. And I think if you look at what going back off, even what you said on the defensive side of the ball and maybe this was pre-recording. I'm not sure. I can't remember now. So I might go ahead.
Quite possible.
But whatever.
Go ahead.
When you talk about, you know, hey, the first evidence of the locker room being changed was the benching of Isaiah Buggs, you know?
Yes.
This goes right along with that. This is a move that, hey, if you have someone that's going to fight for extra yards and go out of their way and make good catches and this and that, you got to figure out a way to make them have room on the team for them, because those are the guys that are going to win you games.
Yeah. We're not getting it out of James Washington. We're not getting it out of Cody White. So what's the plan here? You know, James Washington's going to be gone at the end of the year, but he is a reliable target. He's been a reliable target for years for the team. Just never a dynamic guy. Cody White is just basically on the team because he's been dependable catching the ball when the ball has been thrown to him. Yeah. But again, this is not a dynamic guy. He's not going to create separation and give you open targets. If you want open targets, you need a dynamic guy like Anthony Miller. So I feel like you got to try to work him into the offense at this stage.
Yep. Well, so we'll see what happens with that. Moving on to the defensive side of the ball, defensive line. Obviously, Isaiah Buggs was not activated for this game. Benched, whatever you want to call it.
I'm calling it benched.
You call it benched. He's calling it benched before the game when he was texting me. He's like, you see this? Isaiah Buggs was benched.
Healthy scratch, a.k.a. benched.
Benched. I thought we saw okay play out of Henry Mondeau. I was impressed a few times with Isaiah Loudermilk, however.
Isaiah's making strides, man.
Yo,
he's making strides. He blew up that lineman, knocked him all the way into the backfield.
Dude, yeah. He was lifting that man up and pushing him back. And that's the kind of thing you want to see from an interior offense or interior defensive lineman. Excuse me. He was playing in interior, if I remember correctly, on that play.
Yeah, pretty much realistically, 90% of the snaps that our defensive linemen are playing right now are as defensive tackles in a nickel defense, which basically means they're playing inside.
Yeah.
There was only maybe four or five snaps that they played in the 3-4 in this game, and all of them had Cam Hayward at the nose tackle. So, yeah, I would say he was definitely from the interior on the play, and at least we're seeing some spark out of him, because we're trying to figure out at this stage, when things start going this horribly wrong with the season, especially at a crucial time where they looked like they were going to make a run, you start looking at young guys, and what do you have in these young guys, and which ones do you think you have a future that maybe is a higher potential than what you would have thought when you drafted him, or maybe you thought the potential was there, but you're starting to see a little bit of it. Yeah. I think there's definitely promise with Isaiah Loudermilk. It's encouraging to see.
Yep.
Honestly, with Mondo, I felt like his best play was on special teams, which came later on in the game once the Spillane injury happened. But boy, does he cover ground well on punt coverage.
He's man. Quick.
It's impressive for as big as he is. It really is. And he did get involved in a couple plays on defense, but no sacks, no forced fumbles, no tackles for loss. These are the common thread that we're seeing with every defensive lineman not named Cam Hayward right now.
Yeah, unfortunately. But speaking of Cam Hayward. Yeah.
8 tackles, 1 sack. He was all over the place. We've been saying it all year. If only we could clone him.
If only we could clone him, or even get Tyson Alualu or Stephon Tuitt back. Here's the thing, and I'm going to be very blunt about this. If our defense was 100% healthy, Joe Hayden, Stephon Tuitt, and Tyson Alualu, this team would be massively leading the league in, I think, both turnovers and sacks. Maybe not turnovers. Trayvon Diggs is an animal, but...
But sacks for sure, I'm going to tell you right now, the commentary on what kind of season Devin Bush is having changes like 100-fold if he's got those 2 healthy bodies out in front of him. It's making all the difference in the world because people are easily able to get to him on the second level, and he's never meeting guys in the hole because he doesn't get the opportunity to. He's always got a guard draped all over him, which some guys are big enough and long enough to throw that guard off to the side, and some are not, and he is not, and he needs a clean area to work, and he just hasn't gotten it all season long, and you feel like he's just looking disheartened. You did see Devin Bush get benched after the first series where he tried to tackle running back, came through the hole, just kind of threw an arm out there. It didn't work. He ran after him. It just looked like he wasn't into it. You saw one of the defensive coaches get in his face, and then he got benched, and Spillane was out there.
Yep.
Now they still used him in nickel, but in the base defense, he was out.
Yeah, and Spillane was only out there again until the knee injury, which was unfortunate because I think Spillane plays better than both of our starting middle linebackers personally, at least in this point in the season or this point in their careers or whatever you want to call it. At this stage of the year, he's playing better than those other two.
And it's more willingness and aggressiveness. He wants to play on the opposing team's side of the field. He wants to be there, and the other two don't look like they want to be there. And last week you heard me going off about how Devin Bush just got completely owned by Austin Ekeler, and one of the reasons was when Ekeler came out of the backfield going for a pass, Devin Bush just gave him clean releases all game long. He never chucked him. He never tried to push him to slow him down. In this game, we saw Spillane get subbed in, and what did he do? The running back comes through the hole to go out for a pass. He comes right up in him. He chucks him, pushes him backward, knocks him off his balance. Didn't knock him down, but he knocked him off his balance, taking all of his momentum away,
yep.
And the quarterback throws to somebody else. He's not even a viable option just because you made that contact. That's what's so drastically important. It's all technique, and it starts with being aggressive. We just haven't seen that out of Schobert and Bush all year long. We saw it from Spillane. Then, of course, he injures his knee. We don't know how bad yet, but it was bad enough that he did not return to the game, which makes you fear that there could be something more serious involved here. No updates at this point. We'll see in the Mike Tomlin press conference tomorrow. He always does an update on injuries. If there's anything that they know at that point in time, they'll let us know. We'll try to pass the information on to you guys. But if it is a significant injury, hopefully we'll get to see some of the other backups in the game. This might actually get Buddy Johnson off of the inactive list because you're not going to bring another middle linebacker onto the active. You've already got 6 of them. So it's just going to push either Marcus Allen into play, Ulysses Gilbert III, or Buddy Johnson. And Buddy might be the biggest thumper of all 3 of them. So maybe you give him a shot. Maybe you'll let him try the base defense and see if he can make something happen against the run.
Yeah, and maybe even see if they bring an outside linebacker on, as I just saw breaking news happen that Steelers have placed outside linebacker TJ Watt on the COVID list. So TJ Watt.
Oh, Jesus. Are you serious?
TJ Watt may be out for the upcoming game. I would assume him to be out. So
there's a chance because he's vaccinated. Yep. All he has to do is test negative Friday and Saturday, and he'll be good to go on Sunday. But yeah, that is awful, awful news.
So we'll see what happens with that. But also, I mean, looking at the linebackers, we talked about Devin Bush a little bit. I thought Joe Schobert played better than he has, but also not. It's so weird with Joe Schobert because I'm watching him play and I just haven't seen a spark. I haven't seen a highlight play. I haven't seen anything that shows me or tells me that he's the answer to any of our needs at the middle linebacker position. And I don't know if you agree or disagree. You're shaking your head yes. I'm assuming you agree.
I agree 100%, man. I don't see it with him. I see a guy that runs to the ball. He's always trying to get the tackle, but he's never the guy meeting you in the hole. He's not the guy forcing fumbles. He's not getting interceptions. There's no tackle for losses going on.
He's not even breaking away from blocks.
He reminds me of Larry Foote. Larry Foote was always the guy that got the tackles, but didn't get the tackles for loss. At least Larry Foote got some sacks once in a while.
Yeah.
But Joe Schobert is literally just filling up the tackle column, and that's it.
He led the team in tackles this game.
He has on the season. Yep. He hasn't even been with them the whole year, and he leads the team in tackles. So it shows you that he's getting good hustle to go to the ball. But again, he's typically getting dragged as he's taking somebody down. He almost never drives somebody backwards when he tackles him. So I'm with you 100%. Joe Schobert is just like an also-ran at this point, and it's just because they don't have enough faith in any of the backups to put him in front of him.
Yeah. I want to backtrack just for a second, just because I feel mean. We did forget to talk about Chris Wormley, and he did have a sack. So,
yeah, it's fair. That's fair. It was a good effort sack on his part.
Yeah. Joe Burrow tried to spin out of something the way he did earlier that led to a touchdown rushing on his part, but didn't happen this time.
You did at least see some good pressure from the outside guys, which led to the ability for both Wormley and Hayward to get a sack in this game.
Yep.
You give him credit. You know, we've been looking for more sacks out of somebody not named Cam Hayward that's a defensive lineman. I think that's two on the season for Wormley now. So he's giving you something. You still want more than what we're getting, but at least we'll give him credit for that for sure.
Yeah. Outside linebackers, I thought we saw nothing big to show from Taco Charlton. TJ Watt was getting double teamed again all day long, was getting bumped by the tight end before the tight end would go out on a route. They did a very good job of neutralizing TJ Watt. And I don't believe anybody else stepped up to fill that role. You had a lot of guys that were one-on-one and couldn't beat their man. You had a lot of blitzing corners or blitzing DBs that couldn't beat anybody or get to the quarterback. Was very disappointing. I
felt like we got some pressure from Alex Highsmith.
Yep.
But again, didn't get him to the ground. So I think he was the second man there on Cam Hayward's tackle. He was behind Cam.
But you know what? Alex Highsmith can't freaking catch, apparently.
Oh, God, yeah.
He had multiple opportunities to pull a ball in that was thrown right to his hands. And I think he tipped it five or six times before Joe Mixon basically took it from him.
Yep.
I don't know. I don't know what to say. That was a pristine opportunity for us to make a momentum swing, if you want to call it that. I don't think it would have been a momentum swing, but
no, but they would have been in scoring range almost immediately. They would have been at the 50.
They would have been at 50.
Yeah. Yeah. It wouldn't have taken much of an offensive effort to end up in field goal range. Not that a field goal would have made a big difference in the game.
Which would have been great because they didn't have much of an offensive effort all day.
Yeah. 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 Honestly. Yeah, you really, that's the kind of thing that you look at after the game and you just say, hey, the ball wasn't bouncing our way this game. But I think it was a lot more effort than ball not bouncing our way, to be fair. But, yeah.
We got
I think in the future, Alex will catch that one.
I hope so. We got out-coached, out-played, out-hearted, out-muscled. I think any way that you can think of getting beat, we got beat that game. And you know what? Before we move on to defensive backs and everything, bravo, Cincinnati. Bravo. They
outplayed us, period.
They have been the dirt of this division for quite some time now, probably since the Carson Palmer days. I don't even think there was a time where Andy Dalton really felt like a real threat. But good job. Bravo. I'm proud of them. I'm proud of them for the simple fact
they have a legitimate team now.
They don't have anybody on the team right now that I hate. Like, they don't have a Pac-Man Jones or a Vontaze Burfict. I can live with them playing well. Let me clarify. I'm not happy they beat us. I will never be happy they beat us. But I'm happy that someone put a beat down on us the way that we needed to maybe have something change in the locker room. Maybe have something change in the way we practice. Maybe have something change in how we scheme for defenses or scheme for offenses or anything. Something needs to give, and I don't know what it's going to be. But hopefully this game did it. And listen, the game, I think it was 17-3. Or maybe it was even 10-3 at the time. And I texted James and he was very upset with me. And I said, this is going to be like, I said, ha ha ha, we're horrible. This is going to be the worst game of our year. And he was like, why are you even going to watch if you're so negative? And I'm like, because I want them to prove me wrong. I want to be proven wrong by them. And I'm giving them every opportunity to, not that I'm giving their team opportunities, but they didn't prove me wrong. And I'm happy we got beat down because I need something to change. I think if we win that game in a close game, I think we get plastered the next week or the week after that. Like, I just something's got to give.
There are personnel changes that have to happen, and you have to stop beating your head against the wall. And I agree with you there. Like, at middle linebacker, we've been talking about the struggles here. So enough is enough. Let's give some of these backups a shot. Let's get them on the field and see if somebody can make a play. Same with the offensive line. We've been complaining about the play all year long. Enough is enough. It's time to bench Dan Moore, move Okorafor over to the left, and start Zach Banner. He might be the best offensive lineman on the team, and he's not playing. He's the best paid offensive lineman on the team, and he's not playing. He's fully healthy at this stage. Get him on the field, because the results we're getting out of the group out of there is not sufficient for him to be sitting on the bench. It's just not.
I would agree. All right, on to the secondary.
Secondary. Let's talk about the secondary, man. Let's talk about James Pierre and get it out of the way, because this might have been his worst game of the year.
It was by far his worst game of the year. They attacked him all day long. He couldn't do anything to stop anything. Run, pass, screen, you name it, they did it to him, and he couldn't stop a thing.
Touchdown pass that he gave up, I felt like he played it perfectly until the ball got there, and then he just showed zero ability to figure out where the ball was.
It almost
like you watched him stay in front of him and stay in position, and almost like boxing out in basketball, he was between the quarterback and the receiver in perfect position. Man, you're like 6'2", James. Get up in the air and bat the ball away. I don't expect you to necessarily pick it, but at least get a hand on it. He couldn't even get face in the right direction, man.
I almost thought he flopped on the play. I look back at it, and I don't understand how his body moved the way it did. Don't get me wrong. Who was it in the end zone? Was it Higgins? I don't remember who it was.
I think it was Higgins. I don't remember, to be honest.
It doesn't matter. The player put two hands on his back, no extension whatsoever to call for a pass interference. I agree with the no call, 100%. And he just fell to the ground. And maybe he jumped back, and I don't know. It didn't make sense in my head. I saw him calling for the offensive pass interference. Then on the replay, I said, no, you just straight up got outplayed. You got mossed on the play.
The only thing I can think is that, you know, the hands were definitely on his back, and you could tell there was no like solid push, but if his hand was there, it was like the top of his hip where he had it. If it was there at the right time, it would have taken away all his momentum jumping.
Oh yeah, for sure.
The only thing, but you know, it obviously was not like a huge shove or anything, but there's no questioning that the receiver had his hand there to not create additional separation, but to maintain the separation that he had. And it's, I don't know. Pierre's still got to make the play.
100%.
He's got to figure it out, and he's got to make the play.
We saw Akilah Witherspoon this game. He had a tackle for loss.
He had a pass breakup near the end of the game, but by then the backup quarterback was in, so I don't know how much of that was just a backup quarterback throwing the ball. I won't be surprised if he starts getting a few more snaps, just because the cornerback room in a hole is struggling so mightily. You know, if if you're not getting great play out of anybody, why not play them all? You were telling me you were just frustrated with James Pierre. You didn't want to see him out there anymore. And my response was, who the hell are we going to put in, man?
Anybody but else.
Now, yeah, now that I'm separated from the game, I look at it and you know what? Yeah, it's time to let Justin Lane play some. It's time to let Akilah Witherspoon play some. You might as well split up the reps between the three of them and Pierre and see if anybody elevates their play.
Yep.
Because right now, what we have in Justin Lane or what we have in James Pierre, one thing we know for sure, it's not good enough to be a starting corner.
Not even close.
It's just not, man. And if the plan is to have him and Cam Sutton be the starting corners next year, it will be worse than what it's been this year.
It will be. Let's take this moment now to talk real quick about a guy that you've been watching in college ball.
Let's talk about Sauce, man.
Talk about him, because I don't know much. I know what you've texted me, but I want to hear from you. And I'm sure people want to hear from you.
Every year I get excited about the cornerback class. This is the guys covering the wide receivers, not the guys throwing the ball. The cornerback class. The reason I get excited about it is because one of my favorite players growing up was Rod Woods, and I was blessed to be able to watch him through his entire career, and what an incredible athlete he was. There was no doubt he was going to the Hall of Fame his first year of eligibility, which he did. And ever since then, since he left the team, Pittsburgh has struggled to find any elite corners, let alone anybody even get nominated to the Pro Bowl. I don't think it's happened yet. Maybe Joe Hayden got a Pro Bowl with the Steelers, I think, maybe.
Maybe.
But he's
maybe
really
I
about it.
Once, maybe. Maybe.
Yeah. So it's just been guy after guy. Either he's got athleticism, but he can't play the ball, or he can play the ball, but he has no athleticism. And it's just horrible combinations. So Sauce Gardner is playing right now for the Cincinnati Bearcats. If you get a chance to watch any of their remaining games, they may be in the college playoffs. They were the number four team. They did win. There's rumor that they might get knocked out and not end up in the playoffs. If so, I would highly encourage watching their bowl game if they get one. It's a chance the kid won't play in a bowl game because he wouldn't want to get hurt. But he's listed at 6'2", 188, and he doesn't look 188 at all. He looks way more built than that. He does have a thin lower half, but extremely explosive, sticky as can be in coverage, and a really solid tackler. Just kind of an elite corner kind of guy, and he's not scared of contact at all. When you need to bolster the cornerback room, the Steelers badly need a number one corner. Even with Joe Hayden out, what we've seen from Joe this year is that he is starting to slow down. I was really hoping for a second half of the year kind of explosion from him, and it's just not happening. So depending on where Pittsburgh's draft status is, where they end up in the first round, if you get an opportunity to draft a guy like him, boy, you really have to be tempted to do it. Because a tall corner with good speed, good coverage ability, great hands, and good tackling ability we have not had in maybe 30 years.
Nope. And I wouldn't know because I'm not 30. But that's just where we're at in life, James. That's just, we're at two different places. Working at the same place, though.
That's very true.
Doing the same thing with the podcast. We're talking Steelers.
That's right, man. Let's talk about this. I mean, I need some sauce in my life, all right? I want sauce in black and gold.
We'll make some sauce. We'll start selling some sauce. That's how we'll pay for some Steelers tickets or something. I don't know. We'll figure it out, guys. We'll figure it out. Moving on to safeties real quick.
Yes.
Because I don't have anything else. I mean, Cam Sutton didn't play very well either. That's all I'm going to say there.
But he didn't get torched like Pierre did, no. So I can't beat him up too bad.
True. So there's nothing else to say about cornerback room. Terrell Edmonds did some okay tackling this game. I think there was a couple times he still had some bad pursuit lines and this and that, but...
Yeah, so did everybody, you know?
That's true. Every single person. Minka Fitzpatrick got a pick.
Beautiful pick, right?
And then we didn't do anything with it.
Yeah, immediately turned the ball back over.
Yep. Whatever.
But you know what? Give Minka credit. He never gave up in the game. And heck of an interception. Maybe Pro Football Focus will start giving him a little bit of credit now that he has an interception under his belt.
Maybe.
Hopefully he can expand on this, maybe take advantage of the upcoming matchup with Lamar, turnover Happy Jackson, and maybe get another INT there followed up and start making something happen on the season.
That'd be nice, wouldn't it?
Mm-hmm.
We can dream, James. We can dream.
Boz for president.
Boz for president. Boswell always has a good game. It's been a while since he's had a bad one for sure.
Happened this year.
No, he was what? 2 for 2 on.
1 for 1 on field goals. 1 for 1 on extra points.
Field goals and extra points. Excuse me. Oh yeah, we only had 10 points.
Yeah,
I forgot. For whatever reason, I was like, oh yeah, we got 17, right? No, we didn't.
He almost led the team in scoring. Almost.
It's very close. It was very close. Pat Freiermuth edged him out just by a hair.
Yeah.
But yeah, Boswell played great. Presley Harvin III
was very okay game. The average yards per punt was not good.
No, it wasn't.
But some of that's field position too. You know, if you're too close to the end zone, then you can't punt it into the end zone. And yeah.
Yep. But missing that.
Nothing astounding there. Kick returners was new this week. So we had Anthony McFarland Jr. doing the kick return duty. And then Cam Sutton doing punt return duty. Cam didn't really flash at all, I didn't think, but I thought Anthony McFarland looked every bit the part. So I am completely okay with Anthony McFarland Jr. getting kick returns.
Yeah, I'd like to see it more. I would like to see
it more. Yeah, I mean, if Ray Ray can't come back off the COVID list in time, I am fully comfortable with seeing Anthony McFarland Jr. taking kick returns. Fully.
Yep. So that's where we're going to end the discussion about the game. We're going to go into after game information real quick. We talked about the injuries already with Robert Spillane, as well as Pat Freiermuth being evaluated for the concussion protocol. They were asked about practice recently. A lot of the players were asked about practices, and Minka Fitzpatrick thinks they need to do more reps or do the reps at a faster pace, which that sounds good to me.
Yeah. When you're talking about a consistent theme from veteran players of things not being taken seriously enough in practice, then, you know, Minka is on that board. So we've heard from Cam on this. We've heard from Joe Schobert on this, and now we've heard from Minka on this. Pretty experienced guys, guys that have some serious pedigree. I mean, Schobert has been a Pro Bowler in the past. Just because we've complained about his play right now doesn't mean the guy doesn't know how to practice.
Nope.
So now we're talking three of the defensive players, three starters, all talking about how things aren't being taken seriously enough or going through the motions fast enough during practice. And then Chase Claypool was asked his opinions on how practice could be improved, which was a good open-ended way of phrasing it. I'm kind of glad that the reporter asked him that way. His response was, maybe we should play more music. That would make things more fun.
Yep.
Oh, Chase.
Here's the thing. I'm not necessarily against that, but you have to prove that you can take practice serious before it can be fun. And right now, you should not have a fun practice after you just lost a game 41-10.
It's work. It's not necessarily supposed to be fun, bro.
Nope. If you want to have more fun, go out there and make a flashy play and have fun with it. But I still don't think you should be doing it after a loss.
If your number one goal of practice is to make it more fun and not productive and better yourself and be prepared for the upcoming game, then you're missing the point of practice, bro.
Talk about practice, baby. Talk about practice.
Yeah, we are talking about practice.
Better than talking about playoffs. Don't get us started.
Playoffs!
That was actually really good. That sounded like it a lot.
Thanks. I've been practicing for like 15 years.
And then also to end the after the game stuff, the Steelers did sign a defensive tackle, Montravius?
Yeah, something like that.
Montravius Adams.
He was on the Saints practice squad.
Another black and gold team.
That's right, man. And this is a run-stopping kind of specialist, a nose tackle type. He was 6'4", 303 when he came into the league, which I believe was like 2017, 2018. So you can almost guarantee he's bigger and heavier than that now. But strengths during his original scouting report was getting run penetration and being able to stop people and hit people hard at the line and behind the line.
Which is what we need.
So badly. We need it so badly. And honestly, I wouldn't be surprised if a message is sent to the locker room via cutting Isaiah Bugs this week. You know, as much as I know they don't want to do stuff like that, they need to do something to send a message of the effort that we're getting is not enough. Here's a guy. We're just going to start him off the street because the rest of you aren't doing it.
You heard it here first, ladies and gentlemen. James is calling it. Isaiah Bugs cut this week. If it happens, send us a dollar. I don't know. send James a sandwich. I don't know.
If it happens, give us a 5-star review on Apple Podcast and share the friggin' episode on Facebook and
with
Twitter.
All your Steelers friends.
That's
share,
all of
share
them.
It everywhere.
Not just some of them, all of them.
All the Steelers friends. I don't care if they're partial Steelers fans. Just share it.
I think after the way they've been playing the last couple of weeks, a lot of Steeler fans are partial Steeler fans.
You're totally not wrong, James. You're totally not wrong. Now it is time to look ahead to
Let's talk about these Ravens, man.
I don't even want to talk about
them. You don't want to talk about
it? I mean I do. I don't have their roster pulled up because I just don't care. I'll tell you annoyed. It's what?
It starts with Lamar Jackson.
It does start with Lamar Jackson.
As good as Lamar Jackson is, he is among the league leaders in throwing interceptions on the season. He had 8 going into this game yesterday against the Browns. He threw 4 more. So now he's tied with Joe Burrow on 12 interceptions on the season. Again, an opportunity for Pittsburgh here with a guy that takes chances with the football in the air. We've got to play more disciplined on defense. If you think Justin Herbert going 9 carries for 90 yards was bad, it's going to be a lot worse with Lamar Jackson if you don't play disciplined gap assignment sound football. So very important that they rush and stay in their gap and stay in their rushing lanes when doing so this week. Running back Devontae Freeman wasn't on the team to start the year, but he's playing well for him because that's what happens when you're a running back for the Ravens, unless you're Le'Veon Bell, then you get cut.
Nobody cares about Le'Veon specifically. Wide receiver room is actually pretty stacked. They have Sammy Watkins, Hollywood, Marquise Brown, even Rashad Bateman, the rookie, and then Devin Duvernay as well. And then there's a couple other guys back there as well. Miles Boykin, don't forget about him.
Don't sleep on him.
Yeah, don't sleep on him at all. And then the tight end room, Mark Andrews, Nick Boyle, Eric Tomlinson. Mark Andrews is definitely their, I think they're one of their biggest passing threats. That Lamar loves going to his tight end.
Yeah, he does. And with good reason, let's be honest, this man moves the ball down the field. Tremendous hands, good route running ability. Gotta pay very close attention to him. So I would imagine Minka's probably going to draw that matchup this week.
Absolutely. And then you look at that offensive lineman with the familiar name to start it off, Alejandro Villanueva at the left tackle, left guard Ben Powers, center you have Bradley Bozeman, right guard Kevin Zeitler, and then right tackle Patrick McCarry. It's a stout, it's a big offensive line.
Huge.
They're very big individuals. I mean, Alejandro Villanueva, 6'7", 6'8", whatever he is. How tall is he?
9.
6'9". That's what I thought. Yeah, I said 7'8". I was like, no, he's bigger. And obviously, we know him very well. He didn't play well against us last year when we played him, which was a good thing.
And let's be real. Again, we know weaknesses of former Steelers, right? Biggest weakness Villanueva has is when guys use that dip to get underneath his pads and go around him with speed. So that is what Alex Highsmith needs to take advantage of this week. Stress those speed moves and then counter it inside. That's how you're going to beat Villanueva. He should be able to get the Lamar at least once or twice on this
game.
And
the only way he can stop that is if he sits on you. And if he sits on you or lays on you, that's a holding. It's a flag.
Possibly.
It depends on how he does it.
You could sit on someone legally.
Okay, listen, we're going to move on. if you look at their defensive side of the ball, defensive tackle Calais Campbell, I think, is one of their biggest threats on their front seven.
He missed this game against the Browns, so hopefully he misses the one against the Steelers too.
That'd be nice. And then you have Brandon Williams at the nose tackle, defensive end, Broderick Washington. And then it's where the middle linebackers to me the linebackers in general on this team are a little bit scary, even though some of them aren't big names. Justin Houston's been in the league forever. Josh Bynes and then Patrick Queen. Another very good, I believe, was he drafted last year or was he drafted with Devin Bush's class? No, it was
last
year. It was last year because Devin Bush and Devin White were the two in that draft. And then Tyus Bowser finishing off that linebacker core. All very capable linebackers when it comes to blitzing, pass coverage, covering tight ends, all this stuff they can do fairly well. Justin Houston, being the older guy, might not be able to cover as well if he ever gets into a coverage situation playing zone or man. Take advantage of that. That's a weakness to look at.
In a very important matchup, I don't know which side he normally lines up on, but Odafe Oweh, formerly Jason Oweh of Penn State, has extreme speed as an outside pass rusher. He plays a lot for them, oftentimes starts. If he's opposite Dan Moore Jr., expect it to go horribly for Pittsburgh, because he does not handle speed well, and this man ran in the 4.3s in his defensive end. So it's a possible,
he's fast,
horrible matchup for Pittsburgh. So hopefully they'll make the adjustment and just move Okorafor over there, because I do think that this is the kind of game that Dan Moore will get badly exposed if he starts and plays the whole game.
Yeah. And then the secondary, James, who do we got?
Oh, we've got, let's see here, Chuck Clark starting at one safety with Brandon Stevens on the other side. The cornerback room, Anthony Averett and Jimmy Smith, with Chris Westry backing them up. So not the best corners in the world. Should be some opportunities throwing the ball against these guys. But again, your offensive line needs to hold up to give them time to throw it. These corners can be beaten.
Is Marlon Humphrey? Is Marlon Humphrey out?
You know what? He played in this game, yeah. So Humphrey should be starting as well.
Okay, so yeah, Humphrey would be there.
It's basically Humphrey and then a lot of guys that are nowhere near as good as Humphrey.
That's true. You're not wrong. Averett's not bad. Averett's not bad, but he's nowhere near the level of Humphrey.
He's a little guy, isn't he?
I believe he's like 5'11".
Yeah, 5'11", 178. He's just a little guy.
Yeah, and then you got punter Sam Cock, kicker Justin Tucker, one of the best kickers in the league, second to only Chris Boswell, and long snapper Nick Moore, and then obviously kick and punt return Devin Duvernay, excuse me, their speedy wide receiver. So that's gonna round up the looking ahead. Keys to success against the Ravens, James. After you, good sir.
Number one, stop the stinking run.
You're telling me. Tell them, James.
If you don't stop the run against the Ravens, this will be uglier than it was against the Bengals. They'll put up 250, 300 yards rushing on us easy if you do not make a concentrated effort on this. So I don't care what you have to do. If you have to bench three quarters of the starters on the front seven, just leave Cam Hayward and Alex Highsmith, and it sounds like maybe TJ Watt's going to be out with COVID, but if he's able to come back and play, start those three and bench everybody else. I don't care. You got to change things, and you have to stack the box against them and force them to throw. Lamar Jackson is not a world beater throwing the ball. If you stop the run and focus on that like they did against Cleveland and held them to 10 points, do that again. Whatever you did against Cleveland, do it against Baltimore, and you've got a chance in this game. Number two, capitalize on the turnovers. Again, Lamar Jackson loves to turn the ball over. It's one of his favorite things other than running the ball. So he does it a lot against Pittsburgh. He's done it a lot this year. There's no reason to think that he's not going to turn the ball over against Pittsburgh. It's going to happen. You have got to take advantage when you get those turnovers and not just turn around and give it right back to him, and capitalize and score on those opportunities. Go get some touchdowns. Go get some field goals. Make sure you take momentum away when you take the ball away, because you're going to get some turnovers most likely in this game.
Yep.
Number three, I want to see at least three offensive touchdowns. I think.